Welcome to the Rhode Island Liberty Report, your source for libertarian commentary on current events in the Ocean State and Southern New England. Coming to you from Rothbard Studios, here are your hosts, Mike and Eric.
Welcome to the Rhode Island Liberty Report from LibertyRI.com. This is episode 14 redo.
The Redux.
The Redux, exactly. Got to apologize. We recorded an episode, it was probably 2 weeks ago, and it was corrupted and couldn't get it fixed. Actually, we had a little trouble before this one to try to get it all sorted out. I think we got it sorted.
The tech's not easy.
No.
But good thing we have you, Mike, because this stuff's way over my head. And, you know, it's too bad because I think we solved all the world's problems in that last episode.
So. Yeah, we did. It's going to be the lost archives. I'll hold on to the corrupted files, but we sound like something out of Star Wars. We're all distorted.
C-3PO and R2-D2.
Exactly. So how's everything going? How you been?
Everything's good. I'm loving the weather. I'm looking to really want to get outside. I want to try and do some stuff in the yard. I was telling you, I want to get some stuff growing out there before it gets too late. You know, really just gearing up for the baby. The baby's coming. That's September. So I'm looking
Can't
forward
stop
to that
clock.
No, that's coming. It's coming. So and you know, obviously super excited about that. But I know and it's funny, I got a new one coming and you got one leaving.
We're kicking her out of the door. Again, kicking her out, right? Yeah, exactly. So
crazy.
Yeah, she graduates this next week, I think it is. I know it is. But it's unbelievable. It feels like just like yesterday.
Yeah, it really is what it's all about. Like, we talk about a lot of issues, and there's obviously so many frustrating things going on in the state and at the town level and different issues. And but it really is, at the end of the day, it's really all about the family. And I think a lot of the thing that motivates me with a lot of this stuff actually is thinking about, you know, my kids and what kind of world are they going to be left, and what kind of morals do I want to instill in them. You know, I think libertarians, we've gotten better recently, but I think tend to have a tendency to get very analytical about things. And, you know, there is a morality to libertarianism that I think sometimes gets lost in the discussion. You know, that's what really brought me to it. And so that's something I want to instill in my kids. And it's something that we all instill in our kids, right? Don't take other kids' toys and don't hit. Keep your hands to yourself.
Keep your hands to yourself, right?
You know?
The golden rule.
Right. And at the same time, it's good to share, right? Yeah. Sharing is good, but at the same time, it doesn't mean
voluntary.
Yeah. You don't taking the other kid's toy is not a form of sharing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
that kid's not sharing that toy with you.
Yeah.
That's not what that is. So,
it's funny you say that too, because, you know, and forcing your child to share with somebody else might not be a good thing. Having a discussion with them saying, hey, you know, you think Bobby might want to play with your toy for a little while? You know, you think about that. You know what? We go through, you know, house cleaning, spring cleaning and things like that. We go through and kids got too many toys, right? Before you get new toys, you got to get rid of some old toys so we don't have so much room. And, you know, talk to them about that. Say, hey, maybe you can give these toys away to somebody who, you know, might appreciate them more, is younger than you. You've outgrown these, you know, that kind of thing. Instill it from that perspective as opposed to saying, you need to go share with, you know, Johnny.
Right. For sharing. I've even said to my daughter's only two, but I've even said to her, like, you know, you can share that toy, you know, with your cousin or whatever, you know, and if she does, I'll say to her, you don't have to, but that would be nice. You know, that's a good, you know, it's a good way to make friends. Sharing is good, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, one interesting thing is the sense of who does the toy really belong to? You know, I bought the toy.
That's right.
So if I want to get rid of it, you know, I'm gonna throw it in the dumpster. It's my toy.
Right.
I let you play with it. Free of charge. So,
and another aspect that you hit on this first in your point there was the having the discussions, right? And, you know, we just did tonight after dinner. We were sitting at the table, and when we talk politics once in a while, and, you know, my son's real quite young. My daughter, obviously, like I said, she's an adult now, so she's getting ready to go on with her life. But she considers herself a libertarian, and but I've taught them taught her and teaching them from the moral perspective, not the political perspective, right?
Sure.
Why we are libertarians, because we don't believe in the initiation of force and using violence to achieve, you know, political and social goals. And again, the whole golden rule aspect of it, which I find is funny because, and we see this on the Facebook page oftentimes where people who consider themselves libertarian are coming at it from a more subject-based approach instead of a philosophical-based approach. And which, again, I think we all start somewhere, but once it clicks, when, at least in my experience, once it clicked with me, like why I believe in liberty, like what the purpose of liberty and what it means, it was like, oh, and then once you make, you know, you get over that hurdle and you start applying that philosophy and logic to other topics, like I've said before, the dominoes just start falling, you know, and it's,
right.
It's just it's that moment of clarity in the Matrix, like we've talked about before.
Right.
Where
yeah,
everything just starts, you know, the red pill, I guess.
You see, yeah, you all of a sudden you see, you know, you see all through the dotted lines. And that's one of the things that really bothers me about the, you know, there's a segment of libertarianism of the, you know, where the Gary Johnson type, right, or the Bill Weld type, the former quote unquote libertarian, of the, you know, fiscally conservative, socially liberal, as if somehow that's a description of a libertarian,
right.
When really it is absolutely the wrong way to look at it. And of course, we have our former governor.
Well, it's just perfect segue into a brand new member of the Libertarian Party. Good for him.
Welcome aboard, Link. So,
to the Wyoming party, I might.
The Wyoming Libertarian Party. So we moved. A lot of people might not actually know that. So Link Chafee, our former governor, independent turned Democrat. No, I'm sorry,
Republican.
So our Republican mayor and senator turned independent governor turned Democratic governor now turned libertarian expatriate from Rhode Island to Wyoming. Wow, what a road.
Yeah.
So he moved to Wyoming and, you know, he said in the article that came out, I think it was in the Globe, he's always been a libertarian because he's fiscally conservative and socially liberal, which, you know, I don't even know what that means. You can be socially conservative and be a libertarian. The whole point is that you're not forcing your social views on other people.
Right.
Right. Being socially liberal, like, being socially liberal means that you think that drug use is okay, right? Or maybe you think that homosexual marriage is okay, right? Being socially conservative means you think drug use is bad, and maybe you think that homosexual marriage is a sin. But you can be either of those and still be a libertarian as long as you're not looking to pass laws that'll force the view on other people. So if you're a social conservative and you want to pass laws that ban gay marriage, you're not a libertarian, right? Obviously. If you're a social liberal and you want to pass laws that, let's say, make gay marriage mandatory in some way, that would be a weird thing to do. I'm not sure how that would work. But in some way, like forcing a social social program of some kind on the people is not libertarian either. No. Right. A good example is religious freedom, right? Like not allowing the religious baker to not serve the gay couple. Right. I mean, that's a form of forcing your social views on other people and not letting them freely choose to associate with who they want to. Right. So I think it's a bad way to convey libertarianism. I think the way that you talked about in terms of, and I talked about in terms of the morality of it, there's a moral centeredness to libertarianism that is not encompassed by simply being, you know, good with your money and cool in terms of letting people do what they want to do and or being cool with, things that look. I think we both agree that drug use, opioid use, heroin use, those things are not good for society.
No.
But what's worse is putting people in jail for it.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
Link
or stealing people's taxpayers' dollars to fight it, and you know, just yeah. If so, again, like we've always said, if someone's doing something that's not hurting anybody else except for themselves, as long as they don't overstep that bounds, hands off, right?
Right.
Again, I will try to help you. I will recommend that you don't do certain things, but if you're going to do it, it's up to you. When you overstep that bounds, those bounds say, you know, you need to get money, so you rob, you know, stereo out of somebody's car or, you know, mug somebody on the street, well, you've crossed that line into aggression. And
right.
That's the issue, right?
Right. And I think that taxation is actually a good example in the sense that obviously there's an economic argument, right? There's a fiscally conservative argument to not having taxation, right? In the sense that it affects the market and distorts it in a bad way. But there's also the moral argument in the sense that it's just not – the right thing to do. It's wrong to use guns to steal people's money against their will.
Right.
Right. And when it comes down to it, that's the more important aspect of it. Yes, the economic aspect is important too, and it's certainly true. But it's true because of the idea that we're going to respect people's individual property.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why taxation distorts the market, is because you're using outside forces to affect the decisions that people would freely make that would set the market the way that it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. I found an interesting couple of quotes that I have. I think you said it was Boston Globe. I just pulled up a Washington Examiner article, which essentially is probably syndicated off the original article. But he says, one of his quotes is, they're against capital punishment, pro-choice, which is not true. Well, from a party perspective, it is true, I guess. From a platform perspective, against war, strongly for the Fourth Amendment, no torture. JP elaborate all these things that America, I would assume, has gotten away from. Spelled wrong here. But you know, something I did notice is no mention of Second Amendment, because if I recall, Chafee was very
wishy-washy
on that issue, right? So I would like to know his position on that.
Or environmental issues.
Environmental issues, correct? Right, exactly. EPA and all this other.
I mean, we're talking about Chafee libertarians. Let's go back to it was our first podcast. Was it the first one?
I don't know if it was the first one. It was one of the first, maybe the second.
First or second one, where we were talking how the House Minority Leader Blake Filippi had talked about being a John Chafee libertarian. And I think the two examples that we brought up to sort of show that John Chafee wasn't a libertarian was his aggressive
foreign policy.
Well, there was the foreign policy, yep. But then there was also just when he was governor, the gun laws that he tried to push, right? And then also the environmental regulations and different things that he pushed as well. And I'm pretty sure Link is on board with both of those things.
Yeah. Well, again, I as someone who evolved from a neocon position, yourself from a socialist position, you know, both far ends of the spectrum that evolved. And again, I hate using the left-right paradigm, right? I don't see it that way. I see it more of the left, right, up, down, you know, off the chart. We're not on, right. on that line, right?
But we used to. We used to see it that way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And but as someone who evolved to where I am now, I fully encourage other people to go down that path, right? So I'm not going to criticize Lincoln Chafee for doing that. What I will criticize for is the stuff he's done in the past that we can talk about. I don't think he was the brightest bulb in the room. It is my understanding, and again, we don't speak for the LPRI, but it is my understanding that one of the earlier LPRI conventions before the re-establishment of the party in Rhode Island years ago, he attended one of the conventions, and I think there were probably four people there, and I doubt they had a quorum, but he did attend seeking the endorsement from the party. My understanding is from what I've heard through the grapevine and just stories over the years. So I thought that was interesting. So he has had an interest or an acknowledgement of libertarians and libertarianism, I would say, which is interesting because a lot of people don't even know, you know, what it is, you know,
right.
You know, a librarian, what the heck is that? You know,
right, exactly. Books,
you know, that kind of thing. But,
it kind of makes sense. Like, look, the guy moved to Wyoming, right? He used to shoe horses. Like you can make fun of him. Right. But I mean, it kind of makes sense. I mean, you know, the guy was kind of adult. Right. But I mean, he wasn't a total dummy. I think he was socially awkward. I mean, there's stories about him when he was in the Senate where he'd kind of just, you know, you'd see a bunch of senators kind of like doing the whole thing, mingling, talking, and he'd kind of be sitting off by himself kind of awkwardly. Like, I just don't think that he necessarily was a politician's politician. Right. He had a family name, a pedigree. He kind of wrote in on that. But look, he was the only Republican to vote against the Iraq War.
That's right. And I give him credit for that. And
a lot of credit. I mean, tens of thousands of deaths, hundreds of thousands of deaths and destruction and starvation and ISIS and all these things that came from that war. That was courageous to do. I mean, it really was at the time.
Especially at that time, right?
Absolutely.
And I will always give him credit for that, for sure. Something else, I've said this jokingly in conversations over the years, when it's been hinted, or no, I say hinted, but talked about Chafee becoming a libertarian just for the fact that he's tried it all, right? The Green Party, I guess he's...
Yeah, he's the only one left.
I guess. But the fact that as a governor, he really didn't do very much.
Right.
He was
a libertarian governor.
Libertarian governor, right? He didn't really do anything, you know?
He was very against 38 Studios and that whole crony corporatism thing. And it's kind of like, he kind of is very Gary Johnson-esque, sort of Bill Weld-esque, right? In that sense. And, the guy ran a pretty embarrassing campaign for president, which was a shame. His big issue was the metric system. I mean, that's not very libertarian.
I just read an article on that recently.
Did you really?
Today or yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, that was silly. Everyone goofed on him. But, he was, quote unquote, scandal free. There was not a whiff of corruption involved with him. I'm sure he was somewhat corrupt, as all politicians are, to a certain extent. But comparatively to Raimondo...
Right.
It's not even close. So I think he gets a bad rap in a lot of ways. And at the same time, I'm very skeptical to see where this leads. I mean, what is he looking to run for the 2020 nomination?
Right. So I think
like Bill Weld 2.0
that question, if I can find it. It doesn't say it in this article, I don't think. But I think the quote was he's not interested at this time or something to that effect. But to that point, I hope he, again, I'm not calling for him to become an anarcho-capitalist, right? Like, he goes down the minarchist route or, some kind of...
He might be too old for that.
No, I don't think that'll ever take hold there. But if he gets, I would like to see him get a little more philosophically, grounded. And it would be interesting, again, I don't know how much input we're going to get from him in Rhode Island now that he's living in Wyoming. But it would be interesting to see how he progresses and his evolution unfolds. It'd be an interesting to watch that, to see how that comes about. But
yeah, I'm intrigued. Yeah. I'm intrigued to see how his evolution will shape up. I do think that he's way more prone to reading books than Gary Johnson. You know what I mean? He's a lot more intellectual. I could see him digging into certain things here and there. But I do think there's certain issues I just don't see him ever compromising on. And I think the environment's one of those things. I think guns is another one of those things.
Although living in Wyoming, you never know, right?
You never know.
Culturally, it's more acceptable out there.
That's true. Yeah. And look, people do change even later in life. I think it is a pretty big story. You have a former governor, former candidate for president who is joining the Libertarian Party just as another former governor and candidate for president is leaving the Libertarian Party. And Bill Weld, who now is running against Trump, right, on the Republican ticket from Massachusetts. So there's something about, moderate, right, moderate governors from New England that are attracted to the Libertarian Party for one reason or another.
Yeah, yeah.
That's sort of interesting.
Maybe there's something to nurture there. And
Jonathan Nunu's next, I think. Yeah. I think he's the next on the boat.
I'm just running down the list of... So we posted the article on the Facebook page and just going through the comments. A lot of people negative about it, right? Get out of here. Somebody says, take his money. So there's one of the well-known conspiracy theorists in Rhode Island says, are you guys joking? You guys sold out the state with Roadmap RI, Agenda 21 garbage.
I can only imagine who that is.
I don't want to say his name.
Father was head of the CIA at one point, wasn't he?
Secretary of the Navy. Yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't have been surprised if his father was on CFR.
Right.
So look, I don't think any of that stuff is that crazy to think that he's, you know, he's a nefarious character in some way, one way or another. But
right.
But I mean, is he really bright enough to be some sort of diabolical mastermind? I just I don't know.
Yeah. So on this person's point here, like, again, I give people room to evolve, and
you have
that's what we're trying to do. Part of what we're trying to do here,
absolutely,
is expose people to ideas that they might not otherwise consider. So if someone gets exposed to those ideas, again, like myself, who was a hardcore neocon, I was in the military, I was a contractor, quote unquote, mercenary, you know, like I did a lot of things that I look back on, and I'm not going to say I wasn't, not necessarily high points in my life, you know, not that I didn't learn from those experiences and that, you know, those things shaped the way I am now, but, you know, I came a long way from where I was. Not many years ago, right? Like in recent memory to where I am now. Same thing. And
same
I won't
thing
speak
with
for
me.
You. Yeah, exactly.
Same thing for me. And yeah, I mean, there was, I would not have classified myself as an anarcho-capitalist until maybe a year ago,
okay.
Honestly. And
yep.
I was much more of a minarchist. And there is an evolution because there are certain things that are just really
hard
to grasp and really feel like it's okay. And I think that, you know, with Link, He was a bad communicator. He was not a super likable guy, right? He's not the guy you'd want to have a beer with.
Not charismatic.
But here, let me ask you this, right? What was the most controversial thing he did as governor that was probably one of the most libertarian things he did? Actually, there were two things, and I'll mention them both. But the one I'm thinking of, take a guess. The holiday tree.
Oh, yeah.
So the holiday tree, this was the biggest controversy, right? Yeah. Don DePietro every morning on the radio going out of his mind about this. And look, he was right about the issue. The state shouldn't be having official state Christmas trees or state menorahs or state whatever.
Right. And this is one of those issues that the right goes out of their minds.
Right. And it's, again, it's not a left-right issue. It's a matter of the state shouldn't be endorsing any religion whatsoever.
And my point on I've made in years past on that issue would be, do I care if there's they put a Christmas tree up in the rotunda of the state house? I don't really care. But are they also going to allow the Church of Satan to put up whatever the display they want to put up? The right would be up in their out of their minds. Same thing with on Ramadan, if they have, you know, if they wanted to put something up. I don't know.
They have to.
But they always respond, and the response is, well, no, that's bad, you know. But and again, I'm not a religious person, so I don't care either way. So it's, you know, it's just that bizarre double standard that gets applied.
As a religious person, right? I don't want the state anywhere near my religion. That's defiling it, in my opinion.
Well, that was very, very much a Roger Williams thing, wasn't
it?
Yeah. He was very much, he didn't want the state involved in the church because he figured that the church the state would corrupt the church, as opposed to nowadays is more of the church will corrupt the state. But
Jesus was rebelling against was the den of thieves and the Pharisees in the temple who were, you know, they were changing money. They were doing all sorts of things in the temple and defiling the religion and working with Rome and whatnot. And so, like, so from a religious perspective, to me, it's gross.
Right.
But this is also the problem with public property, and this is something we'll get to later, right? Which is that you have a state sponsored ceremony of a Christmas tree lighting. Now all of a sudden, you know, you got to have a state sponsored Church of Satan ritual because you can't pick and choose, right? And so, and this is what happens.
And
this is, you know, and this is why. We'll get to it later, and then a different issue. But this is why public property is a problem.
Right, and I don't want my money stolen to support that. Like, as a non-religious person, I don't want my money stolen to support that. And I'm going to assume you, as a religious person, don't want your money stolen to support something that's in contrast to what you believe. So,
no, right, and I don't want the state using my religion as some sort of political tool.
To pander, or shape people.
If they want to allow people to voluntarily put up their own displays in the state house rotunda and just let them do that, that's fine. But well, let's be honest. There was a standard practice of invitations being sent out for Christmas tree lightings, Christmas songs being sung, Christmas. And look, I get it. The vast majority of people who are Christian celebrate Christmas. I get it. But he was right on the principle,
right.
And people made fun of him relentlessly. So there was that. The other thing was the capital punishment, right? He tried to have the, I forget the guy's name, he killed someone in cold blood at a bank.
Okay.
Right. And so it was a federal,
right.
It was a federal crime,
yep.
And he didn't want to hand over the prisoner to the feds,
right.
Because the capital punishment is legal at the federal level.
Right.
And he got crucified for that from the right.
Right.
Crucified,
right.
No pun in, you know, poor choice of words. The guy wasn't going to be crucified. I promise you. But, again, he was right on that issue as well. And so, you know, and look, I used to make fun of the guy in the past too on social media and stuff.
It's low hanging fruit. It's an easy target.
It is. And you know, and part of me does feel bad about that because on some very, very important issues of religious freedom, issues of life and death, he was right on them. And so he does deserve credit for that. And I hope he evolves towards the right direction. I hope he listens to people who are further along on that path and doesn't just shut them out. Like I feel like the Gary Johnsons of the world kind of did. So we'll see what happens, but it is interesting. You know, he was a senator, a governor, a mayor. I mean, he's done a lot. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. You know, it's interesting.
Now he was also the town he was mayor of.
Warwick. That's right.
Is
having a lot of trouble.
Having some of their own problems. I wonder if they wish they had old Link back to handle some of these issues.
You're right.
Warwick's on fire right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Providence 2.0.
I know. Like
in a lot of ways.
It seems to be they're in the news every week, weekly on something new or just things continuing.
Yeah, I think Ken Block and Rob Cody are basically just like tearing the entire town apart. I mean, they can't escape their wrath.
Right.
A lot of the stuff is being exposed with firefighter contracts and all sorts of different things. But what we're going to talk about is the school issue.
Right. That just came up this week. The school budget and, you know, the discussion that they're having to make decisions, right? They only have so much money, can't get blood from a stone, and they got to start cutting somewhere. So they're talking about cutting, you know, sports programs and other other programs.
So
imagine that, right?
Not the sports team, please.
So, well, that's always been a big argument, right? That again, it becomes a sacred cow, right? You can't cut sports, and I'm not saying sports are bad, right? Like my kids involved in sports, well, it goes to a private school, but
as long as they're doing the other stuff.
Well, that's the important thing, right?
I mean, you look at the school your daughter goes to. It's a very, very good private school. They're reading and writing and doing math.
That's
quite
right.
Well. And so there's, you know, if there's something left over after those things are accomplished, the sports are a nice thing to have.
That's right. That's right. I actually find it interesting. As long as they're involved in a sport, they don't have to do gym class. So,
right. That's true.
Each semester they pick a sport and they do a sport, which encourages them to get out and to do a sport, which I think is good because team competition, I love
great.
Competition and
it's great.
Yeah. You know, it builds character and leadership skills and, you know, discipline, right?
And they're going to need those skills if they can't read.
Right.
For sure. So,
right.
So I guess in one sense, if they're not teaching them to read, they might as well be teaching them how to get along and work with other people.
Yeah, yeah. But again, I think if you're going to steal money from people, where should the priority go? You know, if you're stealing money from me for education and we're failing in our test scores statewide, like it's abysmal. I'm sorry. I need to see something else come from that money that you're stealing from me.
Are you saying you wouldn't rather have a state championship basketball team than a, you know, at least 50% proficiency in reading?
At least, right?
You know, yeah. And so I think one thing that's interesting too here is so there was a big protest from some of the, you know, it's not like the whole town showed up. There's obviously a very vocal minority who showed up at the town council meeting to protest the budget for the schools, which is interesting because the town council doesn't decide what they spend money on and what they don't. Right, so they're at the town council meeting protesting the fact that I guess the school department had floated the idea of having to make cuts to sports and extracurricular activities, which if you don't have enough money to fund the schools, seems like the first place you might want to go to. Especially when there's contracts and things that you can't touch,
mm-hmm.
right? Which account for 92% of the budget. So, first of all, so they don't even show up to the right place, right? Now the council can, you know, does decide how much
maybe
money.
Maybe they need some more civics.
More civics lessons wouldn't hurt. studies on civics instead of playing basketball.
Right.
But you know, so the council does decide how much money to give the school department. That's how a lot of these towns work, right? But the interesting thing is that Warwick has one of the highest per pupil funding formulas in the entire state. They spend $19,000 per student, give or take a few hundred dollars there, which is incredibly high. I think Providence might be one of the only towns or cities that spends more than that. I think by comparison, Cranston, which has a better school district than Warwick, I mean, not by a lot, but it's better, has more kids, and it's like $15,000 per student. So, or they have less kids. I can't remember which one it is. But they spend $15,000 per student in Cranston, and in Warwick, it's $19,000 per student. So how much more money? It's not like they're not funding the schools. Clearly, they're funding the schools.
Right.
It's where is that money going? And where is most of it going? It's going to contracts.
Yeah.
And that's where it's going.
Yeah. Warwick's teachers' union is quite...
very strong.
Very strong. You know, it brings me back to a story. I just Googled it and pulled it up. I had read... What's the date on this? Last January. So just beginning, almost, a year, a little over a year and a half ago. There was a charter school that was trying to purchase, a building in Warwick. So they were trying to move from where they were in this article is in Pawtucket. They were purchase a building to expand, make it bigger, better facility. So there's a, I'm just skimming through this article. I don't remember the details, but there was a vacant older school building that they wanted to buy, right? It's a school building, right? It's already kind of
perfect
set up. They were going to go in, they were going to rehab it. They were going to, you know, refurbish it and get it up to speed, modernize it, all this other stuff. Just skimming through this, I saw initial, originally offered $1.9 million for the building in addition to $70,000, $70,000 a year in lieu of taxes. So they're going to buy the building for $1.9 million and pay the city $70,000 a year in lieu of regular taxes, I guess, which seems like $70,000 a year would be taxes, but right. Whatever. So that's the deal they were trying to work out. When they assessed the property, it came in the property value at $2.5 million. So the charter school director came back to the table with a offer of $2.5 million, along with a slight increase in the annual compensation. So they went up from that $70,000. So this ends up falling through, right? So the I guess the town council was the approving authority. Anyway, city council, they nixed it.
They squashed it. Yeah,
we're not going to do it because they were getting all this pushback from the student unions. Oh, you're going to take all the students out of our local schools and you're going to leave gaps in budgets. But the charter school even said that, no, we will cap the amount of students allowed from the city of Warwick to whatever the number was.
Right.
So they weren't going to take more than so many students out of the Warwick school system, the rest of the students would come from the surrounding cities and towns like they were already doing. So even at that compromise to try to do something with a building that's just already sitting there vacant, wasting away, tied up, I don't even know if there's any money tied up in the maintenance. I'm sure they got to keep the grass maintained and all that other stuff. So and they turn it down.
Or even property values around it
drop.
So the tax base goes down in that sense too.
Oh, exactly.
And what's funny too is it's like, what's more important, right? That more students are doing well or that the school looks worse, right? I mean, isn't it better that there are more kids in Warwick who are doing better than the fact that the school might look worse by comparison, right? And it really does go back to the point of monopolies lead to higher costs and lower quality. And the bigger the monopoly, the higher the cost, the lower the quality. And you look at the strongest unions in the state, in any of these districts, Providence, super strong union, right? Warwick, super strong union, right? Two of the worst school districts in the state with the highest costs and the lowest quality.
Yep.
And the towns that have weaker unions, where obviously it's still a monopoly, but it's not as strong in terms of influence, right, or force, and you have what? You have lower costs and higher quality. Now, obviously, the cost would be much lower and the quality would be much higher if we got rid of the monopoly altogether. And that's, look, until people realize that's the problem, this is not going to change. You've got people protesting the fact that they're going to cut sports. Okay. And to a certain extent, it's like, if they were making the argument that, look, you're paying these unions and these union workers all this money, 92% of our budget is going towards contracts. It's not, you know, and you want to cut sports. Well, why don't we cut from over here? If they were making that argument, then I could see them protesting the sports cuts, but they're not making that argument.
Right.
They want everything. They want their cake, their ice cream, their candy,
fudge topping,
fudge topping, whipped cream, cherries, nuts. They want everything. And you can't have everything. Look, you cannot get blood from a stone, but they'll get blood from a taxpayer.
Right. Well, here's an interesting alternative, right? So, and again, I'm not devaluing the importance of sports. I think it's a good thing, right?
Absolutely.
Well, why can't it just stand on its own? Like, if it's so important, the community feels so strongly about it, someone get up there, become a leader of the community, start a nonprofit to fund schools, intramural school sports.
There's already nonprofit sports leagues.
Yeah, well, there are.
Almost every town has a league.
Well, that's true, too. Like, right. Little League and things like this.
Little League, town
I don't know what they get for subsidies. I'm not sure.
I don't think...
Is that the rub and tug thing?
I think that some of them get... They don't have to rent the school gym space,
okay,
or a field space from the town. They might get it for free.
Yeah.
Possibly. But no, obviously there's no town lacrosse team. There's soccer, football, basketball, and baseball, right?
Okay.
Mostly there's town teams for those things. And when I say town teams, I don't mean they're run by the town. These are nonprofit organizations.
Okay.
And you know, there's registration fees. They cost some money. But
that's
not
right.
A lot.
Now that you mentioned that, yep.
It's $100. Yeah. It's $100, $150 for a Little League registration. I mean,
yeah, and I know, like, we have a baseball field not too far from the house, and my son played T-ball when he was, you know, a couple years ago, and they had like a hot dog stand. You go buy hot dogs and nachos and what. I'm sure that's, you know, money
helps raise money
there,
right?
But I think just overall, even if they want to do it in cooperation with the school system, someone just take the lead and raise the money, you know, just raise the money. Like, again, if it's so important to the community, people should just reach into their pocket and give the money, right? Why do you have to take it from people? Just, again, if it's, I can't say it any other way.
It's because they're entitled. It's an entitlement.
Right.
And look, that's what public property leads to. The bigger, the more public property there is. And when I say public property, I'm not just talking about land, right? I'm talking about how big the government is, because the more money the government takes in, the more public property there is. Every dollar that goes through government becomes public property,
mm-hmm,
right? It's everybody's dollar at that point. And so the more money there is that's public, the more people are going to fight over it. And that's what's going on.
Right.
And this leads really nicely into our next topic, which we'll get to again. This would work out so much better if they just privatized the school systems. Then if you wanted to send your kid to a school that focused more on sports than, let's say, it did on foreign languages or sciences, whatever, you could do that.
Yep.
Then there might be a school. I had this great idea. I would love to open a school that just did three things: reading, writing, and math,
mm-hmm,
right? No science, no history, no foreign language. Just those three things up until sixth grade. So like an elementary school that just does reading, writing, and math, no sports, no gym class, no nothing, right? Think about how much shorter the school day could be, how much cheaper it would be to run,
mm-hmm,
right? How much better the kids would do at reading and writing and math, because that's all they're focusing on.
Right.
Right. And the idea that might not be a good fit for everybody. But there's a lot of people who might want to send their kid to a school like that because they don't really care as much about sports, or maybe they can afford to send their kid to play on a travel team or a town sport league, right? So they don't need the public dollar for their kid to play sports. They can play sports. They can pay for it themselves because they have money.
Yeah.
Right. So it just would fit everyone's needs so much better, and people wouldn't be fighting over it all the time.
Right. And to that example that you just gave, that will succeed or die on its own merit, right?
Maybe it's a shitty idea.
Maybe it's a bad idea and you just won't, you'll fail and nobody will
and
come,
that'll
right?
Be it.
Or, and that, and it's done.
At least we'll know.
You'll know, right?
At least we'll know it's a crappy model.
Yeah, that's right.
And look, we should know by now this is a crappy model. I mean, this is a crap model. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. These kids are not reading. They're not doing it. These kids go to CCRI now for free college, and they're doing remedial math. So we're paying for these kids to go to college for 2 years so they can learn the stuff that they were supposed to learn in high school that they didn't learn. It's insane. It drives me nuts. And people, what do they get mad about? That sports are going to get cut.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just craziness.
Yeah,
it's craziness.
Yeah.
And speaking of craziness.
Yeah.
So this story drove me crazy, but not for the reason that it's driving
most
other people crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
So the last thing we wanted to touch on was this whole controversy over the drag queen story hour, that event that was supposed to be held at the Bristol Public Library.
Yep.
And was canceled, and then it was uncanceled, right?
Right.
So just a quick background on this. I'm sure a lot of people heard about this, but if they didn't, there's this thing called Drag Queen Story Hour, right? Where these drag queens go into local libraries and they read children's stories to kids. Okay. And that's what it is. I mean, they're dressed up like drag queens. You know, look, they don't look like, I've seen images. They're not dressed like the drag queens from The Birdcage, right? They're not in some nightclub at, 21 plus nightclub or something. Right. But they definitely look like drag queens. Right.
Yeah.
And it's odd.
The picture I'm looking at, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, okay. So look, here's the thing. So obviously there are people who are like, this is totally inappropriate, for children. This is, or then maybe they think it's disgusting or whatever their opinion is. Then you have other people who are like, this is great for kids because they're exposed to inclusivity, mm-hmm. and it's entertainment. It's really not that different than them going to the circus. It's the same sort of idea, right? And everyone's up in arms over, it was canceled and that's bigotry, or now that it's not canceled and this is a detriment to the morality of our society. And look, everyone's missing the point from my perspective, right? Mm-hmm. The point is, if the problem here is the public library. It's that when you have a public space like this, you can't deny people to use it the way they want because it's everybody's.
Yeah.
If you got rid of it and you had private libraries, then guess what? You could have your leftist liberal library that teaches secular humanism and has drag queen story time. Then you could have your more conservative, maybe religious-oriented library.
Yep.
That, has...
specializes in those types of books,
specializes in those types of books. Or maybe you have a different library that covers everything and is more sort of open to all different viewpoints. And again, it just goes back to the idea that private property is the answer here, because then everyone can do what they want to do without infringing on anyone else's space, right? So I can understand the perspective of the father or mother who might be taking their 4-year-old or 5-year-old to the library that day for no other reason than to maybe check out a book or maybe to play in the children's area. And all of a sudden there's drag queens walking around and they don't want their kid exposed to drag queens, right?
Right.
But then you've got the other parents who, let's say we're looking forward to this event and now it's canceled. Because why? Because some people didn't want it there. Well, that's not fair. It's a public space. But that's the problem, is that it's a public space.
Yeah. Well, so here's the issue with, okay, so the library in Bristol, having grown up in Bristol, right, is the Rogers Free Library. So the history of the library itself is quite interesting. So it was built by, I pulled it up here real quick. So Bristol has a generosity of Maria DeWolf Rogers to thank for the Rogers Free Library, an impeccably designed brownstone building located in the heart of town, blah, blah, blah. So Maria DeWolf, right. So if you're not familiar with the DeWolf family, they were the largest slave traders in the United States. They made their fortune in slavery, right? There's just a couple documentaries on their family. The family itself, like the ancestors, are doing like an apology tour and all this other stuff.
Please tell me there wasn't like slave trade story time.
Like when you talk about reparations, like these people are the ones that should be paying reparations, right? Like, so that's quite interesting. So, but now that being said, the library itself was, there's some history. It was burned down and rebuilt and whatnot over the years. But when it was rebuilt, 1990, it formally began its participation in the automated circuit system, Ocean State Libraries. And when the state of Rhode Island restored funding for library construction in 1999, the Board of Trustees and the town mobilized, expanded the current facility. So I don't know if the trust is active, but it does have a board of trustees. Again, you look at the names. I don't get the names here. It's in a different page. But
is it run sort of like a land trust kind of with like a board that oversees it?
I believe so. But it does get public funding. So it's not an entirely private facility. So it's you know, it's, again, it's one of those quasi things,
like,
right?
A senior center
it's,
or something.
It's got some private funds it raises. It's, I'm assuming it's got its trust that it's, that uses to generate, or that has, money. And then it gets money from the state, obviously here for its rebuilding or expansion. In the fall of 2008, Rogers Free Library threw open its doors, a completely new refurbished 28,000 square foot building, one equipped to meet all the challenges of the 21st century. So, it's interesting, but the fact that it was established as a private library, right? It started off as a private. Why didn't it just stay that way? Keep it as a private library. If the trust that was attached to it ran out of money, or the people managed it poorly, sorry, either raise more money or you got to go.
Right.
You know, like it's.
Well, clearly the people that are running the library now had no problem with this event, right? Because they agreed to it in the first place. And I'm sure the people who give money to the library probably, for the most part, didn't have a problem with this event. It was after it was publicized and there were other people in the town who weren't cool with it. You know, if this library was still run privately, then, you know, I'm sure there would have been some religious zealots who might have gone and protested outside or something. But the event certainly would have been canceled because it's no one's business. It's a private library.
Right. Yeah. Right?
Does anyone care if, some local business were to have, a drag queen show up and do some sort of promotion, walk around outside with a sign? I mean, like, people might be like, oh, I don't like that. But, like, they're not going to cause a statewide issue over it.
Right. Yeah. It's, I thought something else was interesting, and I think I posted this on the Facebook page. I did. Well, so we did post this on the Facebook page, and it was interesting because we wrote a relatively long thing. So I'd seen that June Speakman, who is the newly elected state representative for Bristol and Warren, came out with a statement. And, what we had written, or I'd written, is one has to wonder if June Speakman, Rhode Island representative for District 68, Bristol Warren, would be as motivated to make a statement, in quotes, if it were a group of individuals with views that she opposed, that she opposes being suppressed. So, for example, an anti-abortion group or a pro-gun rights group, maybe a more extremist nationalist anti-immigration group, would she be coming to their defense, you know, outspoken? You know, maybe she wouldn't be against it, but but would she be as outspoken as she would?
Not a chance in hell.
Right. So, how about advocating for the removal of public is what we're talking about here is how about advocating for the removal of public funds and complete privatization of all libraries, so then they can do what they wish with their private property, let them succeed on or fail on their own merit, which is exactly what we're talking about here. You know, so if it's a need, one has to wonder how needed libraries are in this day and age, right? Like it's
a very good point. And look, yeah. I think what's interesting is that this is actually one of the things that people use libraries for most nowadays is the children's programming, right? Are the sing alongs that they do or the story times they have, kids playrooms, mm-hmm. That's mostly what they're used for now. They're basically otherwise pretty empty.
Yep.
That's fairly recent because it's really only been maybe the last, 4 or 5 years that 80% of the population has some sort of internet access at this point, whether it's through their phone or through a home computer or whatever. It's almost universal at this point. They really should. All these libraries should just be digitized and run on the web at this point.
Is that the most efficient way to do it?
You wouldn't have a physical location to hold your drag queen story time.
This is true. You'd have to rent a private space.
VFW hall might not be the place that would rent space.
That might not fly.
But then again, they might.
Yeah,
because they want the money, and maybe they don't care because
this is true.
What they care about most is the money that they're going to use towards their
cheap beer.
Cheap beer or their vets or whatever. They don't care where it comes from.
Yep. That, you never know.
Once it's public property, all of a sudden it's all political. It has nothing to do with, your self-interest and really in any real self-interest.
Yeah.
And virtue signaling nonsense. It's all good. Like June Speakman. Yeah. Like I'm sure if there was an anti-abortion story time.
Right.
Where someone was going to go with, like, the guy that you see standing, at the crossings at Smithfield with the pro-life stuff all over his car, the old guy, like, he's there reading some anti-abortion book to kids, right? Are you telling me they wouldn't be protesting that and asking for it to be canceled? Would people who are saying, well, if you don't like it, then don't go, would they be saying the same thing? No.
Right.
They wouldn't. So they're hypocrites.
Yeah. I think it was John. I don't know if it was here or somewhere else I read it, where he said, okay, time for KKK story hour. I thought that was funny as hell. Not that I would support that by any stretch of the imagination, but that's a good point.
People in costumes pushing an agenda. It's a different agenda. And it's a lot more, a more evil agenda.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's an agenda.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, I think,
I think it goes to the point where we were talking about early on too, like with the Christmas tree thing with Link Chiefs.
Yes.
Like if you're going to do it for them, you got to do it for the others. And
Great Pride Parade. Is a great example.
That's going on now. I haven't looked into it. I've only seen, passing on the...
Some of our, quasi-compatriots, people who call themselves libertarians, some of them are, some of them may not be. There's sort of, let's use the leftist term libertarian adjacent.
Okay.
have done a lot of the free speech stuff up in Boston, who are pushing this thing.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
And look, people actually think that this straight pride parade thing is like a real serious thing. It's
right.
Trolling.
It's trolling.
It's trolling, exactly. Number one. Number two, it's proving a point that, if you can have a pride parade based on sexual orientation, of one orientation, then what's the difference having it on a different orientation,
yeah.
Right? And I get the point they're trying to make. And look, this is the problem with, public streets, public parks, is you can't deny them the permit. You can't deny them the access.
Yeah.
So you either need to get over it, right, and look the other way, or start pushing for private property rights.
Mm-hmm.
And then you won't have to worry about it. You won't have to, they can do what they want on your property. You do what you want on your property, and everyone leaves themselves alone. And they interact when they want.
When they want to, right?
They're and when it's mutually beneficial,
right? And yeah, again, it's the whole force thing, right? It's of your own voluntary action. It's I
could see the straight pride parade people and their private property making voluntary exchange with the gay pride people on their private property, maybe for, improved float design. Quite possibly.
Consulting
services.
And yeah, exactly.
That's
sell
right.
Your time and, so they can up their game.
And maybe the gay pride folks want to hire the straight pride folks for security.
There you go. Mutually beneficial.
We can all get along, people.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I've gone back and forth on the whole pride thing. It's just, I understand where it comes from, like the history behind it, how it's celebrating a freedom from oppression kind of perspective.
Yeah.
I can get that. But then again, when you look at what it's based on is what's, it's a private thing that, again, on private property, I have no problem with it. It's I've been to Pride, so it's not like,
Libertarian Party was the first political party to support gay marriage.
Gay marriage in 1971, right? So it's...
Obviously. And the Libertarian Party in the state has been at every Pride parade for the last 5 years, I think, right? With a table and...
Which is... I don't know if it's for us to tell the story, but it's interesting how the LPRI was treated at Pride.
Oh, I'm sure that's interesting.
Yeah. It wasn't for a group that has been supporting that cause since its inception.
Right.
It wasn't necessarily well received entirely. It was quite interesting.
Well,
I don't know if that's our place to tell that.
It might not be. And I'm certainly not aware of any of that because I've never actually been. But I think that whether or not I think what's interesting here is that we're not here to make any sort of real social commentary beyond don't force your will on other people.
That's, I think that reflects on every point we try to make.
Right.
It's lead it back to that.
Right. You can't tell someone they can't have a pride parade or a straight pride parade or whatever, but you can't also force people to go.
Right.
Right. Force people to fund it in some way.
I'm
sure there's police and stuff that have to deal with traffic and stuff, right?
So, but if you are going to do that, right, you're going to lock down the roads, block all the sections of town off. So when, some organization that you don't agree with comes in. Like I said, we said like the anti-abortion groups come into town to do their thing. They get to do it.
Right. You know? Charlottesville. They have to let these Nazis march.
Let them do it. And I'd prefer that not have, like, I prefer them have to find a venue where they're going to get that kind of reception.
You're
right?
guaranteeing Nazis a place to vocalize their white supremacist crap. Yeah. You're guaranteeing them a venue to do it. Whereas if it was private, good luck with anybody wanting to be associated with that.
Right. And then the people that do associate and say somebody does open up their place to it.
Good luck.
Now I know who you are.
See you later.
And I know what your values are.
If it wasn't for the internet, like people were able to find out who some of these people were who were marching in Charlottesville because they saw their faces. They were able to find out where they worked and stuff. Right. So, but otherwise, if it wasn't for that, you wouldn't know who these people were. This person could live next to you. You don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
But if private property existed, you would know for that reason. So, I think the whole conversation around the drag queen story hour is totally missing the larger point.
Exactly.
The larger point here. And both sides of this issue are missing the larger point. It's the same with the school budgets. It's the same with everything.
Yeah. It should be up to the individual parents in this case to decide whether or not they want to take their children to drag queen story hour. And if they do it, it's up to drag queen story hour. That's a mouthful. To find a place to do it. That's another
poor choice of words, Mike.
We're going to get...
it's been a long day.
We're not monetized, so we don't have to worry about getting...
Demonetized.
Find a place to private place to do it. So, again, everybody's satisfied in that situation. Now, again, there are the people that are going to still protest it because they think it's immoral and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, again, if you have it on private property and you have enough of a buffer zone, if you will, to...
Get lost, yeah. Get off our property.
Oh, well, you know, your voice is not being heard. You know, that's the solution to the problem.
Hey, you know,
private property.
Start privatizing these roads, Mike, and we can get rid of all the parades.
That's right.
Unless you want to pay for it.
It's about the roads. Right? It's funny.
But who will build who the will floats, build? Mike? Who will build the floats? My floats.
We posted a video from Remy. You ever watch Remy?
No.
He does this like parody videos. It works with Reason Magazine quite often.
Okay.
He does like these funny... almost like the weird libertarian Weird Al Yankovic kind of thing, right?
Excellent.
So he did it, and it talks about where to cut the money, right? But they start talking about things like they spent on a $640 toilet and $50,000 conference table and things like this, you know. And I posted with the caption of, and when we say taxation is theft, the first thing we hear is Maroads. As if that's where we need to start cutting. Right?
Exactly. Right. Right.
Never mind all the other crap that we waste money on before we get to the roads. Once we get to the roads, well, we can have that conversation. But you know, the status automatically. Well, who's going to build the roads? Well, how about let's just stop buying $50,000 conference tables. Let's start there.
People always want to jump to like the most extreme thing.
And the it's just
public toilets. That could be a subject for our next episode.
There you go. We'll see what. It comes with that.
Well, anyway, I think that's going to do it for tonight's episode. So we're really glad that you guys listened in. You can find us on any major podcast platform. We have not been booted off. Actually, we're not on YouTube, are we, in any way, shape, or form?
No, we've looked at it.
We've looked at it.
To kind of just syndicate it out that way. But,
So we haven't been kicked off YouTube. We were never on it.
But, well, this brings up a good point before you go into your closing here. The newsletter. This week, I'm going to try to get to it to try to get our listeners to really subscribe to our newsletter.
Oh, that's awesome.
I want to make it a lot easier. One of my fears is we've got a decent following on Facebook. We've got almost 3798 is our number. It goes up. We'll break 3800 and then we'll post an anti-Trump post and it'll drop down.
Oh, yeah.
Then we'll go up and we'll post an anti-Bernie post and it'll drop down. So, we'll make that. I'm going to make that easier for people to. I've been thinking about ways to make it incentivize people.
Yeah, that'd be awesome
to get to. Just so we don't lose contact, right?
Right.
So if for whatever reason we do get shut down on Facebook, we can still keep in touch and with our people who are interested in the state and keep communications open.
But for now,
but
until then, You can find us on Facebook at Liberty RI. You can find us on Twitter at Liberty RI. You can email Mike or me directly, mike@libertyri.com, eric@libertyri.com. Of course, libertyri.com is the website. There's lots of cool articles on there. You can find the podcast on there as well as any other major podcast platform like iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Please leave us comments, leave us a review. You know, anything you want us to talk about in the podcast, something going on in your town that we don't know about, let us know. We'd love to talk about it. And we hope to see you next time.
Take it easy.
You've been listening to the Rhode Island Liberty Report. Be sure to check us out at libertyri.com.